This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. From the onset of a global pandemic to the protests for racial justice, this year has been an emotional and political roller coaster for all of us, even for those of us making the radio and podcasts you love. W. Kamau Bell is a stand-up comedian and the host of the CNN docuseries United Shades of America. And Hurry Kondabolu is also a comedian and writer. He wrote and starred in the documentary The Problem with Apu. Together, the two of them host the progressive news podcast Politically Reactive. It offers a funny and occasionally cutting look into our nation's politics. Kamau, Hurry, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Kamau, the first wave of Politically Reactive started during the 2016 presidential campaign. After a few years off, you guys are back with a new podcast season. Why now?
We tried to stay away, but much like The Godfather 3, they wouldn't let us stay away. Hopefully we'll be more successful than the third Godfather. But yeah, we were, our fans, our audience, the supporters wouldn't let us forget about the podcast. And sort of were like, we love whatever you're doing now, but really what we care about is the podcast. When is it coming back? I absolutely think if fans hadn't kept talking about it, we wouldn't have brought it back.
At times, the podcast sounded and sounds therapeutic for both of you. I mean, was it hard not to have that platform in the intervening years?
Well, we were still talking to each other.
We were still friends.
But we didn't hear it, so it didn't count.
I mean, you know, that was the reason we wanted to do a podcast to begin with, because we'd have these amazing phone conversations that were political and personal and funny and honest. And then after our conversations, we'd be like, oh man, that would have made a great podcast. And then we finally got the opportunity with Politically Reactive. And, you know, so we were still talking to each other. We were still making podcasts that nobody could listen to. But, you know, that's why I think it's special to be back. People can actually see where we've been in the last 3 years and what's happened to us. And that dynamic, you know, has stayed strong throughout our friendship, and you know, I think it shows.
Well, Kamau, I'm trying to think. The last time we spoke was probably a couple of years ago now, because I was still in Chicago. What's been going on?
For me, it was one baby ago. Yeah.
So. Oh wow, was it a whole baby?
I think it was a whole baby ago. Yeah.
So what's been going on in your life in those intervening years?
Oh, not much. I'm still doing United Shades of America. We just wrapped up our fifth season. You know, I think all the work that I was doing when I talked to you before has gotten a lot deeper. People have always accused me of being an activist, and I've always rejected it, but I've actually really connected with organizations to do some work, like with Donors Choose, which is an organization who helps teachers get projects for their schools, and especially right now during distance learning is really important. An organization called Take Back the Court, which is about expanding the Supreme Court seats. So yeah, everything I was doing for fun, I've actually turned professional with.
Why did you resist the activist label?
Because I know activists, and I know it's a job. It's like people think activist is like just a word that you throw around when say that person cares. But activist is actually a job, and you have to get up early and do the work all day. So I think as a comedian, I was always aware that what I was doing, and I think Hari would agree to this too, is a pathway to activism or a pathway for activists to the people. But activist is actually a real job. And I don't want any activists to think that a guy who goes on TV for an hour a week or talks on a podcast is like, yeah, I'm just like the Black Panthers.
Yeah, we're getting paid.
Yeah.
Right.
Activists don't get paid. I mean, they might get paid part-time for a full-time job, but they're certainly not going to get paid by appearance or paid to appear on a program. I mean, that's the... By the way, we are not getting paid right now.
No, you are not. You are absolutely not. This is public radio.
This is public radio. But, I mean, that's a huge difference. You know, like, I don't think... activism is something that is so all-consuming, and there are no real breaks, and you're mentally always in. Comedy can be the same thing, except, like, you know, if you don't show up at a rally, if you don't show up at, you know, your job organizing, that has a greater impact on people. When you don't show up at your gig as a comic, you're really just hurting yourself.
There's another comedian there who will take your gig. Yeah.
Well, we've got so much going on right now, global pandemic, protests, a presidential election that's, you know, millions of people have already voted. Hari, how are you thinking about comedy in this moment and how, I don't know, how you use it in this space?
I mean, comedy, I mean, that's the thing. The reason that senses of humor and comedy have survived this long must mean there is some evolutionary benefit, right? We have no choice but to keep this because it helps us. You know, it's a survival mechanism. It's a defense mechanism. So for me, it's not so like, how do I use comedy here? It just comes out. Like, it's a way to deal with how terrible politics is, how terrible life can be. Like, to me, it isn't so much about like, how do I use this to make it happen? It just happens because I don't know how else to deal with the world. And I think that's true with a lot of people. And certainly the one thing that maybe Kamau and I can do is we know how to do it publicly, and we know how to set up an idea publicly and make a joke publicly and you know, but outside of that, I don't really think it's a deliberate, like, I have no other way to function at this point. This is the way I think we process the world.
Kamau, what about for you?
Yeah, I mean, leave it to the guy who's got like a master's from the London School of Economics to bring up evolutionary biology into it.
It was a human rights master's degree.
Whatever, smart guy. Whatever with all your degrees. That's called jealousy, by the way. Yeah, I think that comedy, you start out being funny and using comedy in your life as a way to get through the world. And then at some point, some of us, a small percentage of us, decide to become comedians. So I don't think any comedian wakes up and goes, how do I be funny today? If you're having that day, that's a pretty rare day. Or you're having a day where you're like, I need to just do something else. But for the most part, that's how your brain works. That's your brain works in that you take in information, and if it frustrates you or makes you angry or makes you super happy even, your brain just naturally goes to, what's the humor in here? If I'm feeling this intense emotion, what's the humor in here? So right now, we're overloaded with intense emotions. So there's lots of opportunities for jokes.
The confusing thing, I think, in part, is that like satire in some ways used to be a lot easier. I mean, with this particular president, every single headline is like an Onion article. So it's really hard to top that. Like, it's the thing that's competing with us is reality.
What's the comedy world like right now? We've talked to so many people, you know, ballet dancers, and we've talked to people in an opera and live theater, the whole nine yards. And, you know, there's just not space for live performance right now. What's happening in the comedy world?
I mean, there are, first of all, it's funny. It's actually sort of, in some sense, going underground, like sort of a speakeasy. There are underground comedy shows, which I think is kind of amazing. I hope nobody gets COVID, but there are comedy because people need to laugh right now. So I've heard that in New York, there are shows that are sort of secret. We will text you right before the show to tell you where it's at. But then there's like a lot of these drive-in shows, like the same way Barack Obama yesterday did a drive-in rally. There are a lot of drive-in comedy shows that like major comedians are going out on. Like Jim Gaffigan is going on tour just to do drive-in comedy shows where people drive up to their car, just like a drive-in movie. The sound comes through the speakers in your car. So, you know, comedy will find a way. But I also think that it is going to affect, I think, the Kevin Harts of the world, the Dave Chappelle's, who kind of only can do it if there's, you know, who can only make a living at it if there's 20,000 people in a place. Mm. Now, luckily for me and Hari, we're not those people.
No. Luckily. No, but I mean, I think also there are Zoom shows, which are very unfortunate, that I think a lot of comics do because we're desperate for it. I can't do them because without an audience to laugh and without something to look at, it just feels like I'm being the funny guy on a Zoom conference call. And I don't want...
Nobody likes that guy, Hari.
That guy usually gets muted.
Yeah. And also, well, one more thing I would say, Jenny Yang, who's an incredible comedian, has actually started a comedy club on Animal Crossing, the game. And I'm so old, I don't know what I just said, but apparently that's a thing that is happening.
Yeah, I have comedy no idea what you just said.
In Animal Crossing. But I want to give Jenny Yang a shout out because that's really incredible.
Well, you know, comedy has always been political, but I'm curious for both of you whether you see the intersection, where you see the intersection of comedy and politics today, whether you think it's shifted at all, Kamau?
The intersection of comedy and politics? I mean, you know, in the post-Barack Obama era, like, Barack Obama was the funniest president we've ever had, at least in current memory, and certainly one of the top 100 comedians in the country when he was president, so maybe top 10. So I think there is always a need for comedy and politics to intersect. And I don't think so, you know, as much as I started out in my career and I'd have managers tell me, don't tell people you're political, just be a comedian. That's not the way it is anymore. I think that there is, you know, there's a huge market in comedy and politics intersecting. You know, some of the best comedy shows are also some of the best news shows. Don Oliver, Trevor Noah. So it's funny. I think from the outside, people wonder about these things. From the inside, it doesn't feel that complicated.
It also feels like more people are talking about political things. I think partly because, one, it's unavoidable, right? And also pop culture and politics have merged in this way because of the Donald Trump presidency, that I think that people who normally wouldn't talk about politics all of a sudden are talking about it because of that intersection. And also he's so absurd in the kinds of things he says and his life and also the kind of the state of the world. It's unavoidable. Like, to not talk about what is happening right now, it just seems like you're not paying attention. And as a comic, you're supposed to know what's happening in the room. And it feels like if you're not talking about it, you're just avoiding reality.
Dan emailed us, Kamal, this is for you. Your unique perception was ahead of its time, but events are finally catching up with you. Please keep on being you. Do you feel, Kamal, like it's harder to kind of stay ahead of the curve in this moment?
I mean, since I didn't realize I was ahead of the curve before, maybe I'm still ahead of the curve. I think I'm just doing the work. I think that's the way I think about it. I'm sort of following the strains of thought that I'm interested in. I do think there's a tendency for me to sort of try to look at what's coming next just because, but I don't know that I know that America's going to know that, but I do think that's just my own curiosity or just curiosity about things that I don't know about. But yeah, I have three kids who are between the ages of 9 and 2, so I have no choice other than to keep going.
Well, Hari, you've both been busy. Your documentary, The Problem with Apu, explored South Asian representation in the media by looking at the character Apu from The Simpsons. Earlier this year, several white comedians and voice actors gave up their roles to allow people of color to voice those characters that they were playing. What was your reaction to seeing that?
The word allow is a weird word.
I know. Even as I was saying it, I was like, make space for, get, yeah.
I mean, they got in trouble, and so they're trying to save face, and these are decisions that were made by a corporation to save face. I mean, look, it's not my documentary, obviously, that led to it. One thing that seemed to happen is after, you know, the death of George Floyd, when everyone was asking for police reform, more than police from, to abolish or defund the police and asking for these things. Instead, that's when Aunt Jemima disappeared. That's when people are talking critically about Uncle Ben. That's when, you know, it's almost like these smaller concessions get made when there's something much bigger happening. Like the same thing that happened in South Carolina, you know, with the murders in Charleston, all of a sudden the Confederate flag is coming down then. It's like it shouldn't take something that horrific for you to concede a smaller point. And I feel like that's what's happening now. Like the culture is changing so rapidly and you can feel the shift that people who are holding on to smaller things like, well, white people should voice minorities. Well, they're kind of letting that go because it's like, it's getting harder to hold on to this ground when all this other stuff is happening.
Well, Kamal, you wrapped the fifth season of United Shades of America a few months ago. What did you learn? I mean, because it seems like each series, you kind of take us on a journey. How would you describe the journey of this latest season?
I mean, you know, we sort of every season there seems to be something that emerges that connects the episodes together. And this season was about the failure of American democracy. Like, I think that, like, and really specifically the failure of American capitalism, because we did episodes about the gig economy and episodes about our economic policy as far as like how it affects Venezuela and things like that. So I think it's about public schools and how public schools are funded. So I think really this season was about how American capitalism has failed us in across the board. And so, you know, and we're already weirdly out shooting the next season, despite my protest to the contrary.
What are you looking at this season?
Well, I'll just say we went to Portland. So that should tell you what we're looking at. We're looking at people fighting for American democracy. So I think that, like, yeah, we did an episode in Portland and we actually got to shoot an episode here in Oakland in the Bay Area about policing. So, you know, it's the news gives us homework assignments pretty regularly. So we take those assignments seriously.
Well, the first episode of this last season was called It's About More Than the KKK, White Supremacy in America Explained. And I look at that title and why do you think white supremacy still needs to be explained in 2020?
I mean, I'll put myself on that too. I think that my understanding of it has shifted even dramatically since I had United Shades. The first episode of the show is me meeting the KKK.
I remember. And, very stressful.
Pretty stressful for me too, actually. So the first episode is about that. And I think that sort of gives the false impression that that's the harshest end of white supremacy. And it's really not. The harshest end of white supremacy is the system that we live in, that as Black people, Indigenous, and people of color, we know that there are weights on our metaphorical ankles to keep us from succeeding, to keep us from lifting ourselves up by our own bootstraps if we can afford boots. So I think the system of white supremacy is something that's more important to look at. And me, as somebody who has been talking in this work, even I had to sort of come to recognize that.
I'm curious, as you all have gotten into this new season of the podcast, how you're thinking about the conversations you want to have and how you want to frame them. Hurry.
I mean, we're trying to be hopeful. I think that that's always a goal. Whether or not Trump wins, you know, or Biden wins, to us, like, the issue, you know, has always been about the bigger issues. Like, a lot of the issues that we've dealt with under the Trump presidency, they're due to cracks that were in the system to begin with that he's been able to exploit. And to us, it's discussing those cracks.
We're discussing the current political climate and comedy with the hosts of the podcast Politically Reactive, Hurry Kondabolu and W. Kamau Bell. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from our guests and from you in a moment. This is 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. Google's free tools and resources are designed to help millions of small businesses get the most out of digital tools. From free online trainings and tutorials to on-demand classes through Grow with Google, offerings include free digital skills workshops, live and on-demand events, and short, helpful videos on key topics for small businesses. Explore Google's free tools for small businesses at google.com/grow.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Voting is crucial, and I don't give a damn how you look at it.
Is this a man?
It was we, the people.
The land of the free and the home of the brave.
Not we, the white male citizens.
Misrepresentative Democracy.
A new series about voting in America from NPR's Throughline.
Listen now.
Let's get back to our conversation with comedians and hosts of the podcast Politically Reactive, W. Kamau Bell and Hurry Kondabolu. So we have what we call a billboard at the top of each hour, which is sort of the pre-recorded. Here's what's coming up on the show. And something happened this morning that, of course, didn't make it to air, but we're going to play it now because I think it sort of captures a lot of what's happening in our minds right now. Hi, I'm Jen White. Today on 1A, W. Kamau Bell and Hurry Kondabolu. The two comedians have a lot going on, including the podcast Politically Reactive, where they talk about everything from the news of the day to the trials of parenthood. It's half left-leaning news podcast and half mutual therapy session. We talk to them about staying funny when the world's a dumpster fire and... who wrote this? Was it Stuart Page? I knew it was! So that was just a real moment where... it just happened. As you all are doing the podcast and you know, you both got new kids, and I mean, this is the place a lot of us are. How are you navigating it all, Hurry?
Oh man, it's funny because in the past, when I wanted to be my most cynical, I would tell myself the world's going to end soon. We've had a good run. It's time to give it up to the raccoons or the aliens or whoever takes over the planet next. And now that I have a kid, it feels like I can't have that. Mm-mm. This kid hasn't even tried ice cream yet. Like, I have work to do. And so I think that's what kind of drives me more than ever, is that I have to create something for him that's sustainable as a parent. I need to help contribute to a world he can live in. So that certainly drives me a lot more, because it's very easy, I think, to just, you know, as much as, you know, I will say comedy is a defense mechanism, but it can also be a like a white flag. It kind of depends on how you use it. And there are times where you're just like, it's done, so let me just make fun of it. This forces me to work a little bit harder.
Kamau, what about for you?
I mean, you know, first let me say this. People with one children, that's cute.
Oh,
as
come
a parent
on.
Of, you know, it's, I don't know even know if that's parenting, honestly. But, like, I just, to be quite honest, like, I'm, you know, in our household, we're hanging on by the skin of our teeth. Like, it is just, like, especially with, like, two kids who are Zoom learning, a two-year-old who's supposed to be in preschool, who every day is just becoming, like, is, like, just becoming more frustrated and doesn't know why. But it's because she hasn't been to a playground and should be in school and should be in preschool right now. I mean, it is every day. It is like you wake up, like it's like a memento. Like I look at my arm to see what I wrote down, like to remind me of the things I do. And it's just about trying to get through every moment. And then at the end of the day, you get the kids in bed and you just collapse. And then you wake up and do the same thing. It's a memento and Groundhog's Day all rolled into one. And so, which are two very good movies that wouldn't make one good movie if you put them together, which is how I feel about the pandemic and all this.
So you all are four episodes into the new season. You've talked to a bunch of folks, John Lovett, co-host of Pod Save America, Corey Bush. She's a nurse and Black Lives Matter activist. You also spoke with Desmond Mead, who led the movement to get the vote for disenfranchised ex-felons in Florida. Let's hear a little bit of that conversation.
88,000 people stood up and donated an average of $300 and say we would not stand by and allow democracy to be held hostage in Florida. And so guess what happened? Florida wanted to give us a hard time. The whole country has risen up and has rallied behind returning citizens like me who want to have an opportunity to participate in democracy.
Harry, what was your biggest takeaway from that conversation with Desmond?
Well, to me, it was, you know, again, a reminder of, you know, how cynicism is not particularly useful. I think for a lot of us, especially in my generation, it's like, what's the point of voting? Right? Like, we already know the system is rigged. What is the point of voting? And when you think about the fact that, like, Republicans have attempted, the right has attempted in many different ways to prevent people from voting, that means voting must mean something. And I think Desmond's story is a great example of that. Like, he is so passionate about voting, and he is somebody who has suffered so greatly by from a failing system. And the fact that he's still, like, excited about voting, that he fought to vote, that he literally fought to vote, that he helped expand voting rights for the first time in, what, like, 50 years. I mean, I think that kind of reminds you how important the most basic part of democracy is.
Kamau, as you think about some of the conversations you've had this season so far, what's been a standout for you?
I mean, our episode today that drops is with Maria Hinojosa and Aaron Belkin. And Maria Hinojosa is a legendary journalist who is a Latina. And it was basically everywhere she went, she was the first Latina to do something in journalism. So I think to know that, like, whatever we're doing, whatever we're struggling with, there are people who come before us who are still here, still doing the work. And she certainly is doing that. And then Aaron Belkin, who's on Take Back the Court, which I'm on with him, gives the definitive argument for putting more seats on the Supreme Court. And I'm really excited that people are going to get to hear that, because there's a lot of talk about that in the media, but they rarely go to the source of people who have the definitive arguments.
And I was certainly cynical about that. I'm like, I don't know if it's a good idea. What's, you know, will this just lead to a back and forth tug of war of adding justices? You know, the democracy and justice will deal with, you know, a moral inflation. And
Hurry's like, the guy's like, my house burned down. Why should I rebuild it back? It could burn down again. Okay.
And that analogy, along with many other things Aaron said, proved very valuable.
Yeah. As you all are framing these conversations, because what I'm hearing you say is that some of what you're doing in the podcast is working out some of the questions you have in real time, that it's like partially, these are the big questions I have, and I want to go to some people who might have the answers. Is that a big part of it for you, Hari?
Oh, God, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we represent the audience. I mean, I think, you know, for us, it isn't let's just present someone's information, or like, we already know this and this is someone that reaffirms it. There are a lot of things we don't know. Like when we had an episode a couple of seasons ago about gerrymandering, we knew very little about gerrymandering, and that still proves to be one of our more popular episodes, even though it's about gerrymandering, you know? I think it's that kind of thirst for knowledge, the thirst for truth, to actually decode a system that is way too complicated. I think that drives it, and I think people appreciate that.
Kamau, I also noted that in the first episode of this new season, you all were very specific. You said, we are going to give you resources. You know, we're going to have the conversations, but we also want to make sure we can point you in a certain direction to take action. Why is that so important to do right now?
You know, I think that as a person who is credited with getting people to have conversations they don't want to have, I've learned the limits of a conversation. Like, you can sit down and agree with somebody and go, wow, you've changed my mind. Okay, but prove it by doing something. So I think that right now, especially in the post-pandemic era, the post-George Floyd, Breonna Taylor era, that the conversations to me almost sound very like 1990s. It's like, no, we're in the 2020. We need to actually move to action. So it's important for me. And also people want that. They want homework assignments, because a lot of people, again, are also like, they're excited about the conversation, but they want to help.
Do you all feel any pressure in that people are looking to you for these conversations, Harry?
No, not really.
I do. You don't?
Really?
I do. Yeah.
Well,
Jesus,
I think, because I'm genuinely curious about these things, and I don't think I can make something that's perfect for everybody, but I know that I'm going to have some questions answered, you know? And also, you know, just to kind of add to Kamau's point from before, like, this isn't a like, let's hear from this side and that side and let's debate it out. This podcast is an activist podcast. This is about creating change. Here are steps to creating change. Here are people who are creating change, and we own that. Like, this is an activist podcast. So if you're coming, if you're listening, hoping to hear, let's hear from the right and the left. That's not what this is. Let's hear from the left and the even further left that's trying to create change and create justice in this country. And that's what Politically Reactive is about.
Kamau, I mean, for you, there's the podcast, but then there's also the CNN series. And I swear, I was seeing you on CNN a lot over the past year. Where are you feeling the pressure?
I mean, I think it's for the first time ever I have this sort of idea of like, is this American experiment feels like it could totally fall apart. And it doesn't even necessarily, on some level, who wins the election is a big deal, but also just what has been revealed and who thinks they should have access to speak, even if they don't have any facts or if they want to define the country in a way that is not inclusive of people like the three of us. So I think there is a huge question in this country right now of is the American experiment about to come to an end? And so I feel pressure like that, because it's like that not only affects America, but it also affects my family. So who am I in this moment, and what am I willing to stand up for? And also, what am I willing to do to protect my family?
Do you also feel pressure being tapped as a person who can speak to some of the things that are happening right now?
Yeah, I often start off interviews when people ask me these big questions, like, you know, I wanted to become a comedian because of Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live. And as I pointed to earlier, Hurry has the big degrees. My wife has a lot of degrees. I dropped out of college, kids. So it doesn't mean I don't have knowledge, but I also think that sometimes people treat me as some sort of like, well, we couldn't book Cornel West, but could you explain this to us? And I'm just like, I'll do the best I can with what I bring up.
Well, on that note, let's take a quick break. We have plenty more to talk about with W. Kamau Bell and Hurry Kadabolu right after this. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Swell. Swell is a place for thoughtful audio conversations that are unlike anything you've experienced. Interact with authors, celebrity chefs, teachers, artists, CEOs, or connect with new people from all over the world. Listen on Swell for fresh ideas and perspectives. And once you're comfortable with the app, start a new conversation by posting a Swell of your own. Swell is free in the App Store and on Google Play. From technologists to podcasters, interesting people are talking on Swell.
On the next episode of Louder Than a Riot, the 20-year fight to clear the name of former No Limit rapper Mac Phipps.
Because me and my brother was close. The years that he lost, that's some of the best years of his life he done lost. For me, it just hurts.
Listen now to Louder Than a Riot, the new podcast from NPR Music.
This is 1A, and we're continuing our conversation with comedians and podcast hosts W. Kamau Bell and Hari Kondabolu. Hari, we got this tweet from Samantha who asks, is there a place for comedy to advance the conversation when discussing deeply serious issues like the death of George Floyd and COVID? Where is the line?
I mean, that question about lines has been asked for forever. I mean, I don't know. Everyone's line is different, and it depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you're trying to achieve laughter, you know, and that's it, then the line is really not there. If it's about, can I advance this conversation and be useful, then you have a line. Like, if you say something that's going to end the conversation, you know, you've crossed it. So I feel like it really does vary from issue to issue, from topic to topic.
Kamau, what about for you? How do you think about that question?
I mean, you know, this pandemic has been long, but it's also, we feel like it's been long. Dave Chappelle released a 20-minute, what was called a Netflix special on YouTube called 846, that was about activism and George Floyd. And in that, he didn't get a lot of laughs, but he wasn't going for a lot of laughs, but people appreciated Dave Chappelle addressing those things. So I think comedy always has a way to address the big issues. I mean, we've done shows of United Shades that are about white supremacy and about reproductive justice, and there are jokes in there. So it doesn't, I think a lot of times people think of jokes and think of a comedian being funny every 15 seconds, but humor can actually work in a different way than that too. So I think that humor is always necessary, and it always makes the message, it's the best way to communicate is through humor.
I mean, stand-up comedy is art. And I think, you know, art and activism, like, everything you do say and that you don't say is a political decision. And I do think, just like all art, like a piece of art generally isn't so incendiary or so powerful that people are moved to act immediately. That generally doesn't happen. Sometimes you'll find a film that really shakes people up. But everything contributes to this larger discourse, and everything kind of helps shift people's opinions. So, you know, when I think about comedy, I don't think about it as how is this going to change the world, but I think about it, is this going to make people laugh? Is it honest to my experience? And potentially, will it lead people to think about something a little differently? And that's all you can do. It's a seed. We're just planting seeds. That's tweetable.
Well, there you go. You know, it's really clear listening to the podcast and even hearing the two of you today that you're friends, you're good friends. This is, I'm curious what you each get from the friendship, because you can have relationships that aren't reciprocal friendships. You know, Kamau, what do you get out of this?
I mean, we were just talking about this before we got on today about, we sort of like, you know, he has a kid now. He just had a birthday. He's showbiz 28. I don't want to say what his real age is, but so he's around the age when I met him, and I didn't have a kid, but he had no kids. He was young. He hadn't found his partner yet. I very shortly after they got married and had kids. I've always admired him as a comedian. I think the love started there. I was like, who is this guy? And sort of admired him and been envious of him as a comedian. And then we sort of talked and we realized we both had similar feelings about each other. And so we, you know, Hari was just saying this, it's always been an older brother, younger brother situation. So I, you know, it's just a very natural friendship, a bromance, if you will, that has survived lots of different challenges. The romantic comedy about our relationship would have a part where we broke up. But, you know, it's just, we really respect and love each other's work and also just love each other.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a friend. He's a mentor. He's an older brother. He's a hero. I mean, he's all those things.
And I am.
But I mean, it's a genuine friendship. And I think especially when you're talking about people you work with, you don't always find that, because there's all sorts of other things, whether it's rivalry or friction or career stuff. And we don't have that. For us, I think his success is my success and my success is his success, with the exception of he hasn't given me an Emmy yet.
Uh-oh. Get on it. Come out. You got work
my
to
Emmy
do.
My Emmy are for my children. No, he's not my child.
Well, someone asks on Twitter, Kamau, why do you feel it's important to understand racists? Personally, I have no use for racists and don't care to understand them. Is that your goal?
No, my goal is to understand racism. And if you want to understand racism, sometimes you got to go to the source. And I would say also, I don't think every show is for every person. So, like, every show, as quiet as it's kept, is not about me meeting with the Ku Klux Klan.
Right.
And there are certainly people who watch the show. Like, I would, like, when we did the Ku Klux Klan show, there were black people on Twitter being like, why would you do this? Why would you talk to these people? I don't need to see them. I get it. I'm not trying to force you to watch it. But there was way more white people going, oh my God, I didn't realize they still existed. So I think that's the way I look at it. Every show has two audiences. The audience who may not need the information, who I want to make it interesting for them too. But then the audience who's never heard of the information. And so I think I always understand that, like, every show's not for everybody, which is why I'm lucky I get to make 8 shows a year.
That echoes W.E.B. Du Bois's Double Consciousness.
Look at you with your master's degree. We're going to have to leave it there. That's Hari Kondabolu, a comedian and writer, also with us. W. Kamau Bell, a stand-up comedian and the host of the CNN docuseries United Shades of America. Their podcast, Politically Reactive, is back for another season with new episodes every Thursday on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hari, Kamau, it was great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
Remember, we have a text club. We'll only ever send you one text a day. It's the fastest way to connect with us. Details about how to sign up can be found in the Ask 1A tab at the1a.org. Today's producers were Avery Kleinman and Emmanuel Johnson. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. Let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.